but America is making peace. In yet another corner of the world, the United States has decided to resume delivery of Apache helicopters to Egypt. The Pentagon announced it late Tuesday, backtracking on a decision officials made last summer following the country's military coup and its violent aftermath. The Obama administration opted to go ahead with the delivery of 10 Apache attack helicopters to help Egypt combat cells of extremists in the Sinai, even though Washington is unable to meet congressional criteria for the full resumption of aid. What do you think the odds are that the Egyptians are going to use the American Apache helicopters to shoot the Islamic fundamentalist terrorist in league with Hamas in the Sinai?
Tokenish to get some good press, but they could use for other things, certainly. And the nice thing is they easily have a shelf life of 12 years or more.
Actually, the Egyptian military hasn't been deployed to attack these terrorist groups in the Sinai, but I am quite certain that that Egypt will deploy these American Apache attack helicopters, Gatling guns blazing, wings whirling, when they take part in the Islamic assault against Israel called the Magog War.
Right, that's what I said. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, they have been deploying some units into the Sinai. Israel had in the past or so. They've been doing something in.
You know, it's interesting in the Sinai. The military has been engaged, but it because it's been attacked, the Islamic terrorists operating in the Sinai have been engaged in delivering massive amounts of weaponry to Hamas in Gaza, but they their means of supporting themselves, their economic ventures, their business activities, has been primarily trading in human body parts. They are harvesting, so I guess they're involved in agriculture in a sense. But they are in the business of kidnapping, particularly Christian girls, but kidnapping girls and young boys, and then carving out their the most desirable body parts, which they then sell. It's a lovely religion.
Hearts, kidneys, livers, corneas, all that good stuff.
All sorts of stuff. And sometimes I understand they actually use anesthesia, although I think they have found it easier just to kill the individual and then piecemeal their body out that way.
Oh, yeah. The Chinese have been doing that with the Falun Gong prisoners for forever.
I think the Chinese, as it relates to their prison population, have relented considerably. To the point now that the Chinese prison population is a tiny fraction of the American prison population, even though China is many times larger than is the United States.
Right,
I had a friend of mine.
I'd like to get one more thing out, and then I have to go and get some calls here. On the overnight, I noticed that the Ukrainian government has said that it had attacked and disbanded numerous checkpoint, outposts that were staffed by ethnic Russians, and that at least five people had been killed.
Yes.
And then I see right this moment on the Kiev Post front page, they say that they've now suspended these operations because of Russian troops amassing on the border.
Yes.
So this sounds like this is stuff that's happened in the past 24 or fewer hours.
Yes, I mean, that's what I was trying to convey in the beginning. I didn't get into the specifics of how many people have been killed because it is really iffy, that kind of reporting. You never know if you're getting accurate information on body counts, and I don't like to emphasize body counts. But at the insistence of the United States, the acting Ukrainian government deployed its military against ethnic Russian Ukrainians in the east. The reports are that they killed five individuals, and that the Russian response is exactly as I shared, which is that they've begun to mobilize their troops again on the border, and they've had their defense minister say that we have no choice. This brazen act against Russians in New Russia, in Little Russia, in the east, necessitates our response to protect them. So,
our attack on the amendment is of no moral significance whatsoever. But the minute the Russians inevitably call in tactical air support and start blowing up armored personnel carriers, they will be vilified to high heaven.
That is correct. That is the way that hypocrites report to the news. That is how hypocrites act. That is how they justify all manner of disgusting behavior. You know, we complain, for example, that Al Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula is a ruthless terrorist group trying to kill Americans, and yet there isn't a single confirmed kill on behalf of the religious organization in Yemen, and yet America has killed hundreds upon hundreds of them. And yet, when we kill them, it's a good thing. And when they talk about wanting to kill Christians, it's a bad thing. They're the terrorists when they talk about killing Christians. And we are the heroes when we actually kill them for practicing their religion. Something wrong with that viewpoint.
Oh, yeah, flaming hypocrisy. But, you know, you can't blame the Americans for using the Russian weapons in Yemen, because the AK-7s, you know, Russian weapons are just mechanically tougher, you know? AK-47 operates better in dirty environment. Not the Heinz helicopters are so stable. Those Russian bear bombers with their counter-rotating props. Very low vibration and airframe stress. Yeah, I love that stuff.
Oh, terrific. Well, thank you, Glenn. I should probably finish. Yeah, I should probably finish.
No, I better go. I'll let you go. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to finish the three things that America, the world could do to end the threat of Islamic terrorism. The first is to tell the truth. The truth is absolutely lethal to Islam. If politicians, academicians, and the media had the good sense to do their homework, to act like journalists, and to actually tell the truth about Islam, Islam could not survive it. Not in any country where a free press was allowed. Islam would cease to exist. It would be exactly like what happened with the Ku Klux Klan back in the 1920s. When their internal documents were published, the public became so repulsed by the nature of the Klan that pseudo-political religious organization was unable to maintain members, unable to recruit members, and died. Now, are there still Klansmen? Yes, but the Klan disintegrated, losing 95% of its members in 3 years. Same thing would happen in the United States. Those marginal Muslims that say, you know, I was born a Muslim, so I'm going to be a Muslim. When they are exposed to the truth about Muhammad, that it is a terrorist manifesto, that Muhammad was a terrorist, that he was a rapist and a pedophile and a slave trader and a kidnapper, and that today's terrorists are following Muhammad's example, they'll cease to be Muslims. That's the first thing. Tell the truth. Most lethal weapon that can be brought against any religion. The second is to stop financing our own destruction by funding the Sauds, we are fueling Islamic terrorism. The same thing is true with us when we supply weapons to Egypt and weapons to Saudi Arabia and weapons to Qatar and weapons to Kuwait. We are arming the enemy, and we are fueling their ability to send terrorists from their countries around the world through our dependence on OPEC oil. And simple resolution. All we have to do is become energy independent, and not difficult to do. Drill off the east coast of America. Drill more aggressively in the Gulf. Drill off the coast of California. Drill in Anwar in Alaska. Build atomic energy generation plants with great velocity. Build them quickly. Build them around every major metropolitan area. Continue to build clean coal as a transition fuel. Build pipelines that transport natural gas so that we can use more natural gas and are not dependent on rails to convey it. Develop the liquefied natural gas process that enables also for us to ship it so that we can export an American resource. And if we were to do these things and do them aggressively, America would be an exporter of oil and the fuel that is used to fund Islamic terrorism would dry up. Islam is incapable of creating a viable economy. And without an economy, there is no way to fuel the Islamic rage that is promoted in mosques that are supported by the likes of the Saud royal family, enriched as they are by American purchase of their oil. That's the second thing. If you want to use a military in the promotion of the second aspect of this, then simply take the oil facilities that the Saud royal family stole from American companies and control the flow of oil out of the Middle East. And you don't have to enrich any business with the oil. You don't have to enrich any country with the oil. Just make certain that the benefits, the profits on the oil, go to positive human things, education, building, infrastructure, the development of alternative energy resources, but that none of it goes to fund Islamic terrorism. And Islamic terrorism will cease to exist. Now, there is the third thing that would cause it to go away forever. And the third is probably as unlikely as the other two to happen, although both would work. And that is that as a nation, as a people, as a world, we all need to turn to the one trustworthy source, to recognize that governments lie, that they're unproductive, that they're counterproductive, and that there is one trustworthy source in this world. It's Yahweh and His Torah, prophets, and songs. Come to know Him. Come to understand what He's offering. Embrace the terms and conditions of His covenant, and the world will be at peace. A longtime listener and friend sent me this email yesterday. It says, one of the teachers at a local public elementary school wanted to have me start an after-school reading program, but the principal wanted to pass on the project. She actually asked me to volunteer there using their own remediation strategies instead of the program that I'm currently using and have been seeing so much success associated with. Now, I passed on the principal's email. I passed along the principal's email to the teacher that heads up the reading program that I'm using now. And here's her reply. So just as a bit of background, Jim has a reading program that he has set up for kids that typically meets in a library, but meets in public places after school, that is all designed to make reading fun. And so it's really a celebration of reading. And he sent me pictures. These kids are just beaming from ear to ear. It says, for these kids, going to a reading program and learning to read more effectively and enjoying reading is something that they can't wait to show up. There are smiles on their faces. They want to be there because he's making reading fun. And I'm going to tell you that there are very few things that I find more fun than reading. It's how you learn. It's how you come to understand. It's the ultimate voyage of discovery is through words. Anyway, here's her reply. So this is a teacher replying to the principal wanting to use the school's approved remediation strategies in teaching kids who are failing to read. She writes, absolutely flabbergasting. If their methods worked, they wouldn't need remediation. I will never understand why teachers, administrators, and school districts do not look for something that actually works. When I taught school, if I had 20 kids and only 7 of the 20, 35%, learned to read, and 13 of the 20, 65%, did not, I would consider myself a failure, and I would not blame the parents. I wouldn't blame TV. I wouldn't blame poverty or the children. I would find something that worked to teach all 20 to read. 65% of American kids cannot read at a proficient level, according to the National Academic EP Tests, Education Profile Tests, I would assume, but NAEP Tests. No other business could survive with that kind of failure. Schools and teachers are not being held accountable. They blame everyone and everything for their failure, except the real culprit, which is the method. The textbook publishers get richer. The kids get dumber. The teachers get held in high regard, along with motherhood, apple pie, and the flag. Okay, that's my tirade for today, she concludes. My friend Jim says, you've covered education-related stories in the past, so I thought I'd pass this on to you. Our schools are far more interested in indoctrinating children so that they are fit in to the round peg of socialist secular humanism. So they are indoctrinated into the propaganda of political correctness so that they no longer think rationally, so that they no longer exercise good judgment, so that they go along, so that they embrace everything that political correctness and socialist secular humanism stand for, so that when there are future elections, socialist secular humanists will prevail. Socialism will prevail. And that is what is happening to our country. Same friend sent me, no, it's a different friend, actually, another longtime friend, longtime listener to this program, sent me an article. And the article begins with, do you know what was served at the Last Supper? And it says the answer is not exactly straightforward. Now, what's interesting, of course, is there was no Last Supper. There was a Passover meal, and I know what was served at the Passover meal. So do you. But there was no Last Supper. That's a religious myth, a myth designed to hide the purpose and benefit of Passover. But anyway, it's, of course, the featured ingredient on the menu is lamb roasted over a fire. The next ingredient is unyeasted bread with bitter herbs. That's the ingredients. And yet, if you look at Michelangelo's famous painting, you will see that there's nothing on the plate directly in front of, well, they will write in this article, Jesus, even though there's no person named Jesus. If you read the Gospels, and there are no Gospels, you will find that only wine and bread are specifically mentioned. Now, mind you, Yosha was celebrating Passover. The connection between him and the Passover lamb is as essential as the connection between him and the unyeasted bread. Without the lamb, without the unyeasted bread, it is an absolute and total, complete waste of time. It's counterproductive. But if you were in a cathedral in Quito, Peru, you would see a very different menu promoted by that church. Their image of this mythical event called the Last Supper depicts a guinea pig as the main course. The wine has been substituted with a corn-based drink called chicha, and the bread is a special blend of cornbread. The instruction of insertion, I should say, of these regional food choices into the paintings of the mythical meal known as the Last Supper is an example of syncretism, a practice of blending the influences of two cultures. Actually, religions. In this case, the Spanish Catholic tradition and the indigenous Andean civilization. Both are religious traditions. Syncretism can be applied to expressions of a culture, including art, religion, and architecture. It is a way of reconciling different practices or beliefs, unifying them for broader acceptance. Ooh, boy, is that ever true. Christianity is a syncretized religion. Almost every aspect of Christianity was an expression that was practiced as a religious rite in a culture that Christians wanted to assimilate into their religion. And so, whether it be Christmas or Easter or Sunday worship, whether it be the Trinity, the use of Lord, of holy water, of a Last Supper, of a Mass, of communion, of Eucharist, the list is hundreds of syncretized events long, of Easter bunnies, of Easter eggs, of hot cross buns, of an Easter ham, of a Christmas tree, of exchanging presents on Christmas, of an All Hallows Eve, Halloween. It just goes on and on and on. All Christianity is a syncretization of many pagan religious beliefs, all under different names. Its purpose, the purpose of creating this hodgepodge of religious mythology, is for broader acceptance. It makes the religion popular. That's why Yosha could say, without any equivocation, all broad paths lead away from God. They lead to death and destruction. Every widely accepted, broadly accepted path, religion, leads away from God. He didn't have to equivocate and say, well, you know, most of them do. He didn't say some of them do. It's a broad path. It has broad acceptance. Then it has grown through blending pagan religious festivals, edicts, doctrines, holidays, icons and images, and it leads away from God. That is a definition of Christianity. Christianity is worse at this than any religion in human history. The presence of the guinea pig of Chicha in the myth, pagan myth of the Last Supper, shows the extent to which these foods are more familiar than just the traditional staples in Ecuador than they, I should have said Ecuador, and they are culturally symbolic. If they are important enough to be inserted into one of the most famous scenes of Western civilizations, then we should give them a try. That's the purpose of this article, is that, oh, you want to celebrate the Last Supper, have a little guinea pig. As opposed to following Yahweh's instructions of eating lamb on Passover. We should give them a try. Let's just embrace all of the pagan traditions. Let's give them a try. Is there any wonder that God hates religion? Is it any wonder the world is so lost? This was a story that was especially troubling. CNN is reporting it. At least 40 U.S. veterans died waiting for appointments at the Phoenix Veterans Affairs Health Center, many of whom were placed on a secret waiting list. The secret list was part of an elaborate scheme designed by the Veterans Affairs managers in Phoenix who were trying to hide the fact that 1,600 sick veterans were forced to wait for months to see a doctor, according to a recently retired top VA doctor and several high-level sources. Again, America is purely hypocritical. Oh, we're going to rally around you. Go fight our wars. And when we send you off and you're maimed, too bad for you. We only celebrate you when you're victorious and you kill the enemy or killed in the process. You come back maimed. Too bad for you. You expect your country to support you if you're maimed. Forget it. But there's a bigger issue here. The U.S. Army that propagandizes how much, you know, all for one, one for all. We'll never lead one of our men behind. We'll go and risk our own lives even to bring the body back of a fallen comrade. When that comrade needs the army is nowhere to be found. There's an issue even bigger than that. We now have the Affordable Care Act, national health care. And look at what happens when the government is responsible for providing health care. The Veteran Affairs is government health care. Just in one center in Phoenix, 40 U.S. veterans died waiting for appointments. 1,500 to 1,600 sick veterans are forced to wait for months, never seen a doctor. Yes, we need Obamacare, like I need a root canal on a healthy tooth. In Connecticut, former Secretary of State, former U.S. Senator from New York, former First Lady Hillary Rodham Clinton, she is lamenting over the state of journalism. Now, the press loves the Clintons. They are the Clintons' primary ally. I guess they're entertaining. She told her audience at the University of Connecticut that journalism is driven now by entertainment, not on fact-based reporting. She said, a lot of serious news reporting has become more entertainment-driven and more opinion-driven as opposed to factual. People book onto the shows political figures, commentators who will be controversial, who will be provocative because it's a good show. You might not learn anything, but you might be entertained, and I think that's just become an unfortunate pattern that I wish could be broken. Now, she's talking about the television media of these talk shows on television that book guests and giggle. They're not even in the business of being informative. They're in the business of giggling, of entertaining. Why would you go there, Hillary Rodham Clinton? Why wouldn't you go to the New York Times, which, by the way, is probably the best news reporting institution in the country? It's not good, but it is by far the best. Why don't you go to the Washington Post, which is vastly inferior? Why not go to the L.A. Times, which is bad? Why don't you attack CNN, which couldn't tell the truth if their network depended on it? It's the hard news sources that no longer get their facts right. It's the hard news sources that no longer do any journalism. They never dig behind the scenes to see who is telling the truth and who is not. They never put conversations in context. The news reporting on the Ukraine is abysmal. It's agenda-driven. It's not entertainment-driven. It's agenda-driven. The news reporting on Islamic terrorism is agenda-driven. It's not entertainment-driven. Now, it's true that the state of journalism is deplorable. There are some journalists left. You know, as I said, I think that most of the good ones still work for the New York Times. When I read articles written by journalists at the New York Times, they're usually more accurate, although not entirely so. Usually better researched, though not entirely so. And they usually hold the advocates of malfeasance accountable, but not always so. I give them a solid C on a grade, but I don't think there's anybody else that would even earn a D. But it's the hard news sources that are the problem. It's not the entertainment show. The entertainment shows don't purport to be anything other than entertainment. And the problem is that if you're reporting evidence, if you're using reason, you're not going to appeal to a huge cross-section of Americans because they want to be tantalized. They want news, for example, that was at the top of the hit parade of the Washington Post. Number one story, the Washington Post today, is that Jodie Foster is marrying her girlfriend. Why would we even care? It's their top story. You know, the top story of Reuters is that Australia rules out a link between debris and the airline that went missing because it's still wallowing in the victims. We don't report news because most Americans aren't interested in evidence and reason. Evidence and reason takes too much time. They don't have the capacity to exercise good judgment. It's been forfeited, drummed out of them in school. And so, just entertain me. I want a good soundbite. I want a good giggle. I want my news presented by a comedian. That's why, with younger Americans, they favor getting their news from Comedy Central. I kid you not. We'll be back with Shattering Myths after the commercial break. As an example of the point I'm making, if you look at the Korean ferry, while it was a sensational story about the victims and the youth of the victims, it dominated the news. When it was a story about the villainizing the captain, who wasn't even at the helm, it was big news. When an explanation is provided for exactly what happened, that the ferry was overloaded and that the woman at the helm turned too sharply to great a speed, which combined with the fact that it was overloaded caused it to capsize, so that we know the cause, it doesn't make any newsfeed. No one is interested in evidence and reason. It's just the nature of what we have done to ourselves. There's a story out of Turkey that begins promising. It says the Turkish prime minister, this is, of course, a fundamentalist Muslim thug, said that his name is Recep Tayyip Erdogan, has offered condolences for the first time for the mass killings of Armenians under Ottoman rule during World War I. He's offered condolences. 1.5 million people were savaged in genocidal rage by the Ottoman Turks. And the best he can do is condolences. His comments came on the eve of the 99th anniversary of the mass deportation of Armenians in 1915. It wasn't just deportations. What happened is that the Ottoman Turks engaged the Tsarist Russia in a battle in World War I. They were on opposite sides. And the Russian Tsarists, while they didn't necessarily prevail, the Ottoman Turks failed. And, you know, in Islam, the promises of booty, of being able to rape the women, of being able to plunder property. And so you go off to war as a Muslim on promises of booty. It's the basis of the eighth surah of the Quran. Stealing is lawful and good. And so they didn't get any booty. They did not prevail. And so they came back through with their tails behind their legs back into the Ottoman Empire through what is now eastern Turkey. And just as Muhammad had done when he and his goons, the first Muslims, failed to take Mecca on his first attempt. When they failed, he had to satiate the bloodlust, the covetousness of his men, or they would have turned on him. So he went and terrorized a town, Kabar. And they promptly surrounded the farming community, and they raped the women. They killed the men. They sold the children into slavery, and they stole everything that wasn't nailed down. Well, that's exactly what happened when the Ottoman Turks, Muslims, came back into the Ottoman Empire having failed. They were allowed, they were encouraged to take out their rage on the Armenian Christians. They raped the women. They murdered the men. They enslaved the children. It was one of the worst genocides of that war. 1.5 million people were killed. An equal number were raped and ravaged by the Muslims. That's the truth. The world knows the truth. Truth is not hidden. So Mr. Erdogan said that the events of 1915 had inhuman consequences. Yeah. His country, the Ottomans, acted as savages. They were inhuman. But he doesn't want to blame the Ottomans. He just says that the consequences were inhuman. And expressed hope that those who died were at peace. No, they're not. They're dead. You can't fix dead. In his message, Mr. Erdogan stopped short of using the term genocide to describe the mass killings. He not only stopped short, he didn't even would come within a million miles of that, and that's the term that needs to be used. Mr. Erdogan, and it was religious genocide, Mr. Erdogan struck a conciliatory tone in his statement on Wednesday in which he offered Turkey's condolences to the grandchildren of the Armenians who lost their lives without ever taking responsibility for their lives. In a statement which was translated into 9 languages, including Armenian, he described the events of World War I as our shared pain. Oh, the perpetrators now share the pain of the victims. What a pile of manure. It is disgusting that people can't take responsibility. Ever.